Swallowing, he managed to gasp out, "Are you okay?" It struck her that in her entire short life, this was the first time anyone had asked that question. "Yeah," she murmured. Her attention flicked between the fallen figure beside her and the blue sky that had turned abruptly deadly. "I'm okay. You?" He peered down at himself as he sat up. Everything of consequence appeared to be intact and in place. "Think so. Too close." She stood and extended a hand. He glanced at it, his dark gaze rising to her face, then gratefully accepted her offer of assistance. "Follow me," Ray said. She turned and broke into a run, the grateful Finn allowing himself to be guided. Around them, Nima Outpost was in complete disarray. Explosions had torn tents and other buildings apart, scattering merchants, traders, scavengers, maintenance workers, and every other innocent bystander in a panicky search for cover. Staff strapped to her back now, Ray led her companions onto the sand-scoured clearing that served as the town's port. Looking back, Finn saw the pair of TIE fighters bank and turn. He had no doubt what they were looking for. "Isn't there any shelter around here?" As she continued to lead him on, Ray shook her head and yelled, "Nothing strong enough to withstand TIE fighter weapons! We can't outrun them!" "That's right," he told himself. "Booster confidence in you by stating the obvious." She pointed to the four-engine craft toward which they were running. "We might in that quad jumper!" Finn shook his head. "I'm a gunner! We need a pilot!" "We got one!" He gaped at her. "You?" While her youth and probable lack of experience troubled him, he knew he was in no position to argue. Anyway, what was the worst that could happen? That they would crash on takeoff instead of being pulverized by the pursuing ships of the First Order? They were still dangerously far from the quad jumper, and terribly exposed on the bare landing area. Another craft loomed off to their right nearby. "How about that ship? It's closer! If nothing else, we could get out of sight!" Ray scarcely glanced in the other vessel's direction. "That one's garbage! We need something that'll move, not just get off the ground if we're lucky." They ducked simultaneously as the two TIE fighters roared past overhead. But instead of firing at the tiny figures, their gunners directed bursts of energy at the fugitive's destination. The quad jumper came apart in a ball of flame, flinging bits and pieces of itself in all directions as the detonation scorched the landing area. Throwing up their hands, Finn and Ray shielded their faces from the heat and flying debris. When they lowered them, nothing was left to be seen of the quad jumper but a smoking pile of rubble. Ray's reaction was immediate and realistic. "Okay, the garbage it is." Changing direction, they raced for the other craft. Though it was partially covered by several protective sand tarps, the loading ramp was down. Finn paused only briefly to glance at the ident plate sealed flush inside the airlock wall. "Mike Khan?" he read aloud. "What the hell does that mean?" Ahead of him, Ray yelled without looking back. "Some con man's private craft, probably. That might be a good thing. It might be built to travel faster than a crippled skimmer."
"If we're lucky,"
Finn muttered, echoing her early observation as he and BB-8 followed. Ray hit a wall panel even before her companions were safely aboard. To her great relief, it responded. The ramp behind them rose and the lock sealed. The vessel's layout was straightforward, and they found the cockpit immediately. Tossing her staff to one side and throwing herself into the pilot's seat, even as she was scrutinizing the instrumentation, Ray activated several controls. Much to her surprise, the console in front of her immediately came to life. She tapped a visualization. "Gunner's position is down below." Turning, Finn headed for the indicated area.
"You ever fly this thing? Or anything like it?"
As BB-8 looked on, she shouted back to him,
"I've piloted all kinds of craft, but nobody's flown this old crate in years."
"Then what makes you think it'll get off the ground?"
he called. Her reply was grim.
If you prefer, we can leave and try running across open tarmac while being shot at.
Having no comeback for that, Finn slipped down and buckled himself into the gunner's seat. To his shock, it responded to his weight by whipping to the left. Hastily, he grabbed hold of the controls.
Whoa, easy.
Manipulating the intuitive controls allowed him to quickly take full control of the turret's movements.
I can do this. I can do this.
If anything, he saw quickly, the track and fire controls were simpler and more primitive than those he had handled in the Special Forces TIE fighter. Ray rapidly ran through a standard pre-lift sequence, activated the full panoply of relevant instrumentation, and sat back. A low whine rose from the rear of the craft. She reached for the control that would, she hoped, bring all her hurried preparations to fruition. One of three things would occur when she thumbed it, she knew. They would lift off, the ship would blow up, or nothing at all would happen. Not good odds, but the only ones they had. She took a deep breath and punched the control.
I can do this. I can do this.
At the stern of the old ship, long, quiescent engines flared to brilliant life. Fully powered up now, it soared into the bright blue sky of Jakku. But not efficiently. Shedding tarps as it rose, it spun and careened wildly, nearly crashing back to the ground. Wrestling with the unfamiliar controls, Ray managed to level off just in time to crash into and through the town's entry archway. Nima Outpost's sole example of architectural pride. Below, the puffy-faced figure of Unkar Plutt emerged from a collapsed structure to scream at the sky.
Hey! That's mine!
Finally, the oddly named craft surprisingly responsive to manual control, an increasingly optimistic Ray spun it around and accelerated, blasting away from the port. The pair of TIE fighters that had been shooting up the town immediately gave chase. Ray headed skyward, relieved to feel the ship's increasing power as they soared away from the surface. Trying to interpret the weapon systems, Finn yelled to her, hoping either his straining voice or the turret's audio pickup would permit at least a modicum of in-flight communication.
Stay low! It's our only chance! If we go extra atmospheric, they'll outmaneuver us and run us down before we can make light speed! Assuming this thing can still do light speed. And put up the shields! If they work!
Shield controls are on the other side of the console!
She shot back.
Not so easy without a co-pilot.
Below, Finn continued to struggle with the highly responsive, wildly swinging turret.
Try sitting in this thing!
Realizing it was impossible to reach the necessary instrumentation while seated in full pilot's position, Ray momentarily let go of the controls. She'd have to do this manually, she knew. Put any ship on autopilot, and the vectoring would immediately be sensed by a pursuer, who could then lock on and blow you out of the sky. In contrast, there was just enough wild wobble in their flight path as she leaned to her right to confuse any electronic predictors.
Her stretching, however, caused the ship to cant sharply as she tried to activate the shield instrumentation on the co-pilot's side while maintaining some semblance of flight control.
BB-8, hold on!
Her warning came too late for the droid. Beeping madly, he rolled ceilingward as the ship spun.
Fingers straining, she just managed to reach the shield controls and flick them to life.
In the process, having to brush away several clumps of excessively long, rough, yellow-brown hairs that had become caught in the console. Relieved, she straightened in the pilot seat and resumed full command, stabilizing the vessel.
I'm going low,
she shouted, mindful of Finn's advice. Driving the ship surfaceward, she pulled up at the last possible moment and sent them screaming across the ground, clipping the crests of at least two dunes. Trying to match the maneuver while pursuing at high speed, both TIE fighters shot past, unable to slow in time. They did, however, each manage to get off successive bursts from their weaponry. Had the vessel's shields not been up, the twin blast might well have brought them down. Just like its engines, The stolen vessel's shields proved unexpectedly robust.
Tougher than it looks,
she thought, as she strove to accelerate and dodge. The original owner had plainly had some serious and probably illegal modifications made to his vessel that on numerous worlds were worthy of fines and possible imprisonment. She resolved to thank that individual profusely if she ever had the occasion to make that acquaintance, provided she survived the next hour. A blast rocked them, and she barely managed to hang on tightly enough to avoid a looming sandstone monolith. Swallowing, she yelled as loud as she could.
Could use some offense down there, you know. Maybe before our body parts are scattered all over the desert. You ever gonna fire back? Hold on, BB-8. Hold on.
Within the cylindrical corridor, the droid was beeping madly as he rolled up the walls, across the ceiling, and everywhere except where he wanted to be. Capable of comprehending the causes of nausea, the droid was fortunate it was not a condition his kind were subject to, but his internal gyros were being forced to work overtime.
Working on it!
Finn called back to her. A moment later, the weapon systems finally came to life beneath his hands. Spinning the turret, he began firing back at their pursuit. The primitive targeting system was clumsier than anything he had trained on or studied, and his blasts missed. Another detonation rocked the ship. If not for their shields, he knew, they would have been debris by now. His mouth tight, he continued firing. The pursuing fighters came on, almost disdainful of their quarry's defensive efforts.
We need cover!
He yelled even as he kept firing.
Quick! We're about to get some.
While she knew little more than theory when it came to maneuvering and fighting in free space, Rey had plenty of experience defending herself on the desiccated surface of Jakku. At least in the vicinity of Nima Outpost, she was familiar with every dune field, every canyon complex, every crater and escarpment. Keeping as close to the ground as possible, she rose and darted over rocks and dunes, grazing one upthrust ridge so closely that she took a chunk out of it. Unwilling to sacrifice distance to gain altitude in order to attack from above, the two TIE fighters stayed close.
Just a little farther,
she told herself, as she clung grimly to the controls.
Just keep them off a little longer.
She was heading for her favorite scavenging spot, the ship's graveyard. Let them try to follow her in there. She banked hard, low enough to cut a crease in the sand. Half wild, a burst from the craft's guns crossed the flight path of one of the tailing TIE fighters and happened to catch it where its shields were momentarily unpowered. Part of the craft crumpled instantly, causing it to trail wreckage as its pilot strove to keep it aloft.
Whoa!
Finn allowed himself a triumphant shout without letting go of the firing controls. To himself, he added, more softly,
damn, that was lucky.
Nice shot!
Ray's praise reached him from above. He accepted it silently, without wasting time explaining that his success was due as much to her wrenching the ship around unpredictably as to any innate targeting ability on his part. As she sent them snaking into the enormous field of derelict spacecraft and other industrial waste, the damaged TIE fighter slammed into one of the metal mountains and came apart. Out of nowhere, a brace of scavengers appeared to begin claiming portions of the remains. No one bothered to check the cockpit of the downed craft to see if the pilot might somehow have survived the crash. Trailed by the surviving fighter, the ship slalomed through the colossal debris field. Sparks flew as she grazed towering metal walls and fallen station sections, but the hull of the borrowed craft held together. As he was banged around in the gunner seat, Finn tried to keep track of the remaining pursuer while peering out at a trash-paved surface that frequently came entirely too near to where he happened to be sitting. Likewise, the next blast that erupted in his vicinity also came too close. The concussion set the turret spinning. When it finally stabilized, its rattled occupant was horrified to find that it had been jammed facing forward. He could not rotate it in any direction.
At the same time, alarms began to sound throughout the ship, indicating that more than just the gunner's position had sustained damage.
"Guns are stuck in forward position!"
he yelled upward.
"I can't move them! You gotta lose our pursuit!"
Yet another blast rocked their craft. Much more of this, Ray knew, and modifications aside, one of the TIE fighters' bursts was going to overwhelm their shields. The vessel they had commandeered was a small freighter, not a warship. Ahead lay the bulk of a downed Super Star Destroyer, its mass inconceivably large where it rested on the sand. Pulling on the controls, she drove the ship downward and into the gaping breach that was the center of a ruined engine thruster. If she hoped this maneuver might dissuade their remaining pursuer, she was wrong. Unwilling to give ground, the pilot of the surviving TIE fighter took his craft in after her. As he sat gawking out the turret's transparent canopy, a disbelieving Finn gauged the proximity of the metal walls that were racing past on either side of them.
"Are we really doing this?"
Sparks continued to flare from their ship's side as Rey negotiated one increasingly narrow passage after another. Even a former crew member would not have been as familiar with the corridor she chose. But she had not merely familiarized herself with them from a diagram. She knew them intimately, having inspected them individually and on foot or with climbing gear.
"Get ready!"
she yelled to him. Finn nodded energetically.
Okay, I'm ready."
Then he frowned.
"Ready for what?"
"Have to time this just right," Ray told herself as she prepared. And if Finn wasn't ready, the maneuver she was about to try wouldn't matter. They would be shot down as surely as Unkar Plutt underpaid his scavengers. Finn was relying on her skills. Now she had to rely on his. Uninterrupted light appeared at the far end of the service corridor down which she was flying. Another blast from the unrelenting TIE fighter pilot nearly sent their craft crashing into the corridor's ceiling, and she only managed to correct at the last instant. There was no time to check readouts to see if any critical part of the stolen ship had been damaged. All that mattered was that they were still airborne, and the controls continued to respond to her touch. Then they were out, flying in bright sunlight. The instant the ship emerged from the decaying guts of the old Super Star Destroyer, she cut the power just so and swung the ship completely around. Fortunately, as a trained stormtrooper, Finn was used to wild swings of his personal cosmos. So where such a tight aerial twist and turn might cause another, less experienced passenger to lose the contents of his or her stomach, Finn retained not only those, but his wits as well. Now heading directly back toward the immense relic, he once more found the surviving TIE fighter directly in his sights, and he reacted accordingly. Whether it was their vessel's sudden and unexpected reappearance just outside his own targeting instrumentation, or the shock of what seemed to be a suicide plunge, the fighter pilot's fire missed. Fields did not. Ray turned the ship hard away from the hulk of the Super Star Destroyer as the remaining TIE fighter burst into flames, lost speed and altitude, and crashed to the surface in their wake. Working the controls, a jubilant Ray sent the ship accelerating into the clouds. Those and the sun-blasted surface of Jakku soon fell astern, giving way to the cold yet comforting blackness of space. Feeling confident that she could now entrust temporary control of the ship to its autopilot without fear of being tracked, she slipped out of her harness and hurried out of the cockpit. In doing so, she passed BB-8, who, after the acrobatic aerial contortions of the past few minutes, was only now able to steady himself.
"You okay?"
she inquired in passing. Several short, curt beeps avowed that he was, while also communicating that the experience they had just gone through had been less than pleasurable. She found Finn in the lounge, trying to regulate his breathing while coming down from an adrenaline high. Turning to her as she slowed, he gave her a wide, disarming grin.
"That was some piloting."
"Thanks," she shrugged.
I've been flying every kind of junk you can imagine almost since I could walk. It was her turn to smile. Speaking of which, that was some shooting. I was worried you wouldn't have time to react.
You could have told me what you had in mind. Might have saved me a heart palpitation or two.
She shook her head.
No time. I had to pull the turn almost as soon as I thought of it. I just had to rely on your ability to react to the maneuver.
He nodded.
Good thing my hands were frozen to the track and fire controls. When all of a sudden he showed up in my sights, all I had to do was twitch my fingers.
You got him on the first blast.
His smile gave way to a touch of self-satisfaction.
It was a pretty good shot, wasn't it?
It was perfect,
Ray told him. It was silent in the lounge for a long moment before he murmured,
Why are we
staring at each other? I don't know.
The need for possibly uncomfortable answers was obviated by a series of insistent beeps from BB-8, who had rolled in to join them. Ray knelt beside the agitated droid.
Hey, calm down. You're okay. We're all okay. For the moment, at least.
She indicated Finn.
Everything's going to work out fine. He's with the Resistance, and he's going to get you home. We both will.
She slid a hand along the droid's curving flank.
I'm not going to abandon you now. Not after turning down the kind of payment Plutt was offering.
More beeps, to which she responded.
I'm just kidding. The amount wasn't what mattered. I just got a huge charge out of being able to deny that bloated bastard something he wanted so badly.
Having calmed the droid, she returned her attention to the room's other occupant.
I don't know your name.
Startled, he realized that on that score he was equally ignorant.
FN2... Finn. Name's Finn. What's yours?
My name is Ray.
This time, when she smiled, all trace of the hardened, desert-dwelling scavenger melted away. It was a sweet smile, he found himself thinking.
Warm.
He repeated the name, enjoying the way his lips parted as he murmured the single syllable.
Ray.
He would have said much more, but this time it was the ship itself that interrupted. On the far side of the lounge, a section of decking broke loose, shot upward, and banked off the ceiling before coming to rest on the floor. Hissing vapor was starting to fill the room, threatening to overwhelm the ability of the atmospheric scrubbers to cleanse it. Ray didn't hesitate. Ignoring the emission spewing from beneath the deck, she raced over to peer down past the ragged edge of the opening. Finn joined her. He suspected the venting gas had to be non-toxic, otherwise they would have been sprawled out on the floor by now, unconscious or dying. Standing alongside her, he tried to see past the raging mist and down into the depths of whatever had blown. She tried to see while simultaneously shielding her eyes.
I don't know. Just hope it's not the motivator. Ship of this age and class is bound to have one.
Sitting down, she slid both legs into the opening. Finn stared at her.
You're going down there? Without even knowing what the problem is?
They locked eyes.
The only way to know what the problem is to go down there. Unless you've got a better idea.
He gave a reluctant shake of his head.
I'm real good at blowing things up. Not so good at putting them together. You sure there isn't anything I can do?
She tried to smile, but couldn't.
While I'm down there, don't touch anything whose function you don't understand completely. And if you hear a lot of screaming and cursing, stand by.
He considered.
You want me to pull you up?
This time she did manage the smile.
Only if there's just screaming and no cursing.
With that, she slipped over the edge and down. Her slender form was quickly obscured by the roaring vapor. Chapter 7. The great sweep of the external observation portal on the Star Destroyer Finalizer allowed anyone standing before it an uninterrupted view of the vastness of space. Suns and nebulae, mysteries, and conundrums, all were laid out before the viewer. It was a view intended to awe and inspire. Hence the presence of the portal, where visual pickups and monitors would have sufficed just as well. Kylo Ren regarded it in silence. He had been trained in contemplation, was skilled in deliberation, could remain meditating just so for hours at a time. But he was losing patience. Approaching from behind, all Lieutenant Maitaka could see was a tall, caped figure silhouetted against the spray of stars. He did not look forward to having to make the report. It was his responsibility, and he had no choice. Nor was it the first time he had been compelled to deliver bad news to a superior officer. But Kylo Ren was different. Not precisely a superior officer, but something else. At that moment, Maitaka would rather have been anywhere else in the civilized galaxy than alone in a room with Kylo Ren. The caped figure did not turn. He did not have to. Maitaka knew Ren was as aware of his arrival as if he had watched him approach. He was tracking the lieutenant with something other than eyes.
Something to report, Lieutenant. Or have you come, like myself, to marvel at the view?
Sir?
A gloved hand rose to take in the sweep of light and energy arrayed before them.
Look at it, Lieutenant. So much beauty among so much turmoil. In a way, we are but an infinitely smaller reflection of the same conflict. It is the task of the First Order to remove disorder from our own existence, so that civilization may be returned to the stability that promotes progress. A stability that existed under the Empire, was reduced to anarchy by the Rebellion, was inherited in turn by the so-called Republic, and will be restored by us. Future historians will look upon this as the time when a strong hand brought the rule of law back to civilization.
Maitaka forbore mentioning that the Republics had developed their own codes of law. To do so would have been indelicate, and he doubted that Ren was in the mood for a political discussion of any kind. Standing at attention, he presented his brief report.
Sir, despite our best efforts, we were unable to acquire the BB-8 droid on Jakku.
Now Ren did turn. Maitaka would have preferred it the other way. He always found it unsettling to have to gaze at the metal mask beneath the cowl.
It was destroyed? Do not tell me, Lieutenant, that the droid was destroyed.
Maitaka swallowed hard.
No, sir. At least not as far as we are able to determine. Reports from the ground indicate...
He was interrupted.
No aerial survey results.
Two TIE fighters accompanied the recovery party. Contact has been lost with both, and it is assumed they encountered unforeseen difficulties.
Ren sneered softly.
You equivocate like a senator. Go on.
Reports from our troopers on the ground indicate that the droid escaped capture by taking flight aboard a stolen Corellian freighter, a YT model, an older craft, but in the hands of a competent pilot, a capable one.
Atypically, a touch of uncertainty colored Ren's response.
The droid stole a freighter?
Not exactly, sir. Again, according to these preliminary reports, it had help.
Maitaka was starting to sweat.
We have no confirmation, but brief glimpses by our troopers correlated with the location of an earlier crash site lead us to believe that Trooper FN-2187 may have been...
He broke off as Ren reached for the lightsaber at his belt, activated the weapon, and raised the intense red band high. expecting swift judgment. My talker closed his eyes. After a moment, finding his head still attached to his neck, he dared to open them once more. Ren was slashing at the console nearby, at the wall, at the deck, rending and ripping, slashing long lines of bleeding metal into the very fabric of the ship. His rage was terrible to behold. My talker strove to remain perfectly still, to control his breathing, to become as invisible as possible, lest he become nothing more than an inadvertent recipient of Ren's fury. Whether by chance or design, Ren spared him. Shutting off the lightsaber, the taller man turned to the wretched bearer of bad news. He spoke calmly, as if his mad, destructive rampage had been nothing more than a brief interlude, an illusion.
Anything else?
At least the worst of the report had been delivered, my Taka knew. And he was still alive. He allowed himself to relax ever so slightly. The two were accompanied and likely abetted in their flight by a third party, presumably local. A girl. Reaching out, a black-gloved hand clutched the startled lieutenant and pulled him violently forward. That metallic visage was now close. Closer than my Taka had ever been to it. As the officer struggled to breathe in that remorseless grasp, Kylo Ren's voice took on a timbre lower and more menacing than any the lieutenant had ever heard.
What, girl?
Kneeling by the opening in the deck, Finn struggled to peer down into the depths. The constant hiss of escaping vapor made it difficult to hear or see anything. He badly wanted to shut off the blaring emergency alarm, but didn't dare move away while Rey was still below and out of sight. Nor did he trust the droid to do it, fearing the worried mechanical might hit the wrong control. While a BB-8 model contained a lot of storage, he doubted the schematic for an old freighter was among the information on tap. Furthermore, this particular vessel had undergone a considerable number of modifications, not all of which might be hospitable to uninvited visitors. Booby traps, for example. As Rey worked out of sight below, he wondered if she had considered the same possibility. Make the wrong adjustment, and they could blow up the ship. Or the ship, responding on its own to unknown pre-programming, could blow them up. He hoped they hadn't escaped the clutches of the First Order, only to eliminate themselves. The head popped up, surrounded by vapor. Perspiration steamed from Rey's face.
It's the motivator. Grab me a Harris wrench.
She pointed behind him.
Check in there.
Turning, he unlatched the storage container she had pointed to and began rummaging through the contents. As a stormtrooper, he was trained to deal with certain emergencies. These included, but were not limited to, troubles of a mechanical nature, such as how to do basic repairs on a speeder and other ground transport vehicles. So he knew what he was looking for. He only hoped he could find it.
How bad is it?
He yelled back at her as he continued to sort through the container's jumbled contents, silently cursing the unknown owner of the ship. Whoever it was, he was no genius at organization. The tools and replacement components filled the container in the most haphazard, disorganized manner possible.
If we want to live,
Ray's voice echoed from below.
Not good.
The ship gave a nasty jolt, reminding Finn of their rapidly degrading situation.
Look, they're out hunting for us now. We gotta get out of this system now! The longer we stay sub-light speed, the more certain the chance that their sweep scans will pick us up. I don't want to have to try and outrun a destroyer.
Ray ignored him and glanced at the nearby droid.
BB-8 said the location of the resistance base is on a need-to-know basis. If I'm going to take you two, I need to know.
She disappeared below, once more leaving Finn and the droid alone in the shuddering, alarm-filled lounge. Busy as she was attempting to make the necessary repairs, He felt he could try to stall her, but that would only postpone the inevitable reckoning. Or he could ignore the query. Same inescapable result. He could lie, invent something, anything. Blurt out the name of any system, any realistic destination. Anything to get away from this world and the attention of the Order. A quick sideways glance showed that the droid was watching him. That wouldn't work either, since if nothing else, BB-8 would contradict him. The only reply that would suffice was the true one, and he didn't have it. He edged over toward the droid. Okay, look. We have to know the location of the Resistance base. You heard Rey. She thinks she can get us there. But you have to tell us where it is.
The droid emitted a flurry of rapid, soft beeps.
An impatient Finn waved them off. I don't speak that, but I think I got the gist. You just accused me of not being with the Resistance, didn't you?
The droid's body inclined forward slightly, a mechanical acknowledgement.
Right, okay, just between us? No, I'm not. I'm a regular trooper who's gone rogue. By my actions, I've renounced my oath. In the eyes of the Order, that makes me something worse than a Resistance fighter. I don't know from the Resistance. All I've heard are stories and rumors and Order propaganda. But I do know what's right from what's wrong. That's why I've done the things I've done. That's why I find myself in this mess here and now.
He paused for a breath.
All I want, all I'm trying to do is get away from the First Order. I don't care where I end up, as long as it's clear of their influence. Would you tell us where your base is? And I'll help you get there first, before I do anything for myself or on my own.
He gazed straight into the droid's visual pickup.
Deal?
BB-8 cocked his head to one side and said nothing. Finn felt no shame in pleading.
Droid, please!
He held the stare until a weary Rey appeared again.
Pilex driver, hurry!
As Finn returned to the storage container and began searching anew, she took the moment to query him once more.
So, I didn't hear. Where's your base? Where's our destination?
Searching through the pile of tools and odds and ends, he murmured tersely to the watching droid.
Go on, BB-8. You tell her.
Nothing from the droid. Not a sound. Not a hum. Finn was on the verge of despair when the spherical mechanical finally uttered a short sequence of beeps. Rey looked surprised.
The Ilenium system?
Locating the requisite tool, a relieved Finn passed it to her.
Yeah, the Ilenium system.
Where the hell was the Ilenium system, he wondered.
That's the one. Let's get this crate fixed and head there as fast as we can, huh?
Doing the best I can down here.
Rey vanished again. As soon as she was out of sight, the grateful Finn gave BB-8 a thumbs up. The droid responded by shooting out a welding torch in imitation of the human's gesture. She wasn't gone long, nor was her attitude any more relaxed when she reappeared.
Bonding tape, hurry! If I get the ship working again, I'll drop you two off at Ponema Terminal, but that's as far as I can go. Ponema's still neutral territory. You should be able to make contact with Resistance representatives from there.
For the third time, Finn found himself plowing through the disorganized tool container.
What about you? What are you going to do? If anyone besides those two TIE fighter pilots saw you with us, your likeness is going to be plastered all over this quadrant. If the Order doesn't haul you in for questioning, reward seekers and bounty hunters will be scouring every port in hopes of picking you up. Better for you if you stick with us.
He threw BB-8 a quick glance.
The Resistance will protect you.
She shook her head. Vapor continued to geyser upward around her, though not as much as before, Finn noted.
I gotta get back to Jakku.
Back to Jakku? Why does everyone always want to go back to Jakku? There's nothing there. Sand and junk and rocks and sand and quicksand and sand. I don't get it.
Picking up what looked like a sealer, he turned to toss it to her.
No, that one.
She pointed, but her stance was none too steady, and her hand kept weaving around. Doing his best to follow her directions, he hefted another instrument.
No, the one I'm pointing to.
I'm trying. And you're not pointing real well, you know.
His exasperation nearly overcame his fear.
That one!
If we don't get a patch on down here, the propulsion tank will overflow and flood the ship with poisonous gas.
He tried another device.
No!
Another?
No, that one! To your left! No!
Sidling up alongside Finn, BB-8 used his head to indicate the appropriate sealer. Hopeful, Finn picked it up.
This?
By now, he was surprised when instead of bawling no, again she replied with an emphatic,
yes!
He tossed it to her, watched as she caught it easily, and once more disappeared below. Leaving the tool container, he returned to the opening in the deck and called down to her.
You're a pilot! You can go anywhere! Why go back? You got a family there? Back on Jakku? Boyfriend? Cute boyfriend?
As the flow of vapor finally slowed and then ceased, so did the interminable alarm. Ray's reappearance coincided with the return of comparative silence within the lounge. She broke it immediately.
None of your business. That's why.
The sudden dimming of lights put a halt to any incipient argument. They flickered but did not go out. All three of the lounge's occupants regarded their newly altered environment. BB-8 beeped nervously.
That can't be good, Finn murmured.
No, it can't be,
Ray agreed as she climbed out of the opening. Together they headed back toward the cockpit. This time, Finn settled into the co-pilot's seat. Looking back at him was a dead console. One did not have to be trained as a pilot to infer that a dead console did not bode well for future voyaging.
It's the motivator, isn't it? That's the component you were so worried about?
When she didn't reply, his heart rate increased.
It's worse than the motivator?
Focusing on the console in front of her, Ray replied without looking up from the instrumentation.
I fixed that. This is something else.
Without much hope, she tried several controls before sitting back, defeated.
Ugh, someone's locked onto us. All our controls are overridden. They've taken control of the life support, too, for that matter. Easiest way to get us to cooperate.
Who's taken control of us?
Tapping the scanner to remind him that it was useless, she could only shrug helplessly. Nothing being visible through the front port, he left his seat and headed for the overhead observation dome.
See anything?
She called back to him.
Yeah.
There was no need for elaboration. She would see for herself all too soon. Oddly enough, the sight allowed him to relax finally. There's no point in overexerting oneself when all hope is gone. The other ship was gigantic, an enormous bulky freighter. The cargo bay door was open, and against the open hangar that loomed above, their stolen vessel appeared no bigger than an escape capsule. Its instrumentation frozen, its engines powerless, and its weapon systems dead, the paralyzed ship was drawn inexorably upward into the cavernous opening. Returned to the cockpit, a defeated Finn slumped into the co-pilot's seat. His gaze fixed forward as he spoke.
It's the First Order. They've got us. It's all over, Ray.
Behind them, BB-8 beeped querulously. Having nothing encouraging to say, Finn did not reply. They weren't going to the Illenium system, he knew. Not now. The likelihood of them even returning to Jakku was infinitesimal. Their fates would be decided on board the ship that was presently pulling them in. Decided and expeditiously carried out. The First Order was nothing if not efficient.
So close.
In spite of what he had done, in spite of his own personal rebellion nearly succeeding, it had all come to nothing. Useless. Poe Dameron was dead. Soon he and this poor girl would join the Resistance pilot. Whatever map or other information BB-8 held would be forcibly extracted from the little droid, after which his memory would be wiped, his AI circuits removed, and the remainder probably recycled as scrap. Finn grunted softly. That was more than he and Ray could hope for. All he could do for her now was apologize for having inveigled her into a mess that was a consequence of his own making. He might relay that truth to the individuals presiding over his disposition, plead on her behalf. But as an ex-First Order stormtrooper, he knew that his words, however eloquent, would buy Ray only as much time as it took for him to speak them. He was bitter and resigned. He also knew that if given the chance, he would have done the same all over again. The only thing that separated him from his comrades, the only thing that defined him as an individual, was his unshakable sense of what was right. That much, at least, he could take with him.
"What do we do?"
Ray was saying beside him. She kept trying the controls to no avail.
"There must be something."
He still could not look in her direction. "We can die." She refused to accept it.
"There have to be other options besides dying."
He sighed heavily.
"Sure, we could run, if the engines could be powered up. We could try and fight, if the blasters would function. We could step into the matter transporter, if such a thing existed."
He shook his head dolefully.
"No, we're dead.
We don't even have hand weapons to try and hold off a capture to..."
He stopped abruptly. Now he did turn to her.
"Earlier, when you were working below, you said something about volatile chemicals mixing to create poisonous gases?"
She eyed him uncertainly.
"Yeah, but I fixed that. There's no blending now."
His tone was deliberate, his stare unflinching.
"Can you unfix it?"
It took her a moment to realize what he was driving at. When understanding came, her expression brightened. Together they left the cockpit and headed back toward the lounge, BB-8 trailing close behind. The emergency masks they removed from their storage stations were designed to protect against loss of atmosphere. They most emphatically were not intended to substitute for the environment suits that were employed during extravehicular excursions. But for the plan Finn had in mind, they should do just fine. Working together, they succeeded in wrestling the droid down into the service area below the deck. Once all three had safely managed the short descent, Finn pulled the blown section of decking back into place over his head. Fortunately, it had come loose in one piece and was unlikely to be noticed by preoccupied intruders. At least, not right away. It would have to suffice. Next to him, Ray was working hard to undo the results of her earlier repair.
"This will work on stormtroopers?"
she wondered, as she manipulated the tools she had used earlier and left behind.
"Standard-issue helmets are designed to filter out smoke, not toxins. To cope with the latter, a trooper needs to engage one of several special filters, depending on the specific contaminant. Identification is the province of one or two squad leaders. Having brought this ship on board theirs, I doubt anyone would think to check for airborne pollutants. It's not like leading a ground assault or forcing entry to an enemy warship. This is just an old freighter. Any kind of internal defense, much less something as nebulous as a gas counterattack, would be the last thing a squad sent to take its crew into custody would expect."
Ray was plainly impressed.
"You resistance guys really know your stuff."
He smiled uneasily.
"You know what they say. Know your enemy."
Abruptly, the ship's internal illumination returned full strength. Even concealed within the service corridor, they could hear the muted sound of the ship's ramp lowering.
"Here they come," Finn whispered. "Hurry!"
"I am hurrying."
Her fingers worked nimbly at the seal she had applied.
"Really hurry! I put this seal in place to keep us alive, not counter a hostile boarding,"
she hissed back at him as her hands flew.
"I made it to last. Don't expect me to take it apart in a couple of minutes. Does this look like I'm taking my..."
"Chewie, we're home,"
Finn heard a man say. Then the covering in the deck above them was ripped away. Hands raised in surrender, hoping that the least they could expect was not to be shot out of hand, they found themselves gazing up at not a stormtrooper. The man holding the blaster on them was not wearing a helmet, not even a protective visor. There was nothing to interfere with his angry expression. It filled a face scarred with know-how, aged by experience, and world-weary, characteristic of someone who had set foot on dozens of worlds. His eyes were hazel, his gray hair tousled, and he wore the look of a man who had seen too much too soon and been forced to deal with idiots all too often. His evident age notwithstanding, the hand holding the blaster neither shook nor wavered. Eyeing him, Finn felt he knew the type, if not the man. His only fear, then, was that the man might shoot first and ask questions later. Thankfully, he did not.
"Where are the others?"
While there might be cracks in the man's countenance, there were none in his voice.
"Where's your pilot?"
Hands still raised, Ray gulped. Who was this hard-faced intruder? And where were the First Order stormtroopers?
I'm the pilot.
Unblinking eyes regarded her with obvious disbelief.
You?
She nodded.
It's just us.
She nodded once to her left.
Us and a droid.
A second shape appeared above and beside their inquisitor. It was likewise most definitely not a stormtrooper. It was also much, much bigger than its blaster-wielding companion. A battery of sounds issued from between thick lips. Something halfway between a moan and a question.
No, it's true, Ray responded. We're the only ones on board.
Finn gaped at her.
Wait, you can understand that thing?
Beating Ray to a response, the man holding the blaster on them warned.
And that thing can understand you, so watch it.
Still aiming the weapon in their direction, he stepped back.
Get out of there! Come on up! No funny stuff! We're watching you.
His attention focused on Ray. He almost smiled. When he did, there was a hint of something half playful in his demeanor. But only a hint. And there was nothing whatsoever light-hearted about the blaster he kept pointed in their direction. As he emerged from the service corridor, Finn found himself looking up at the man's companion. And up. And up. Impatiently, their captor gestured ever so slightly with the muzzle of his blaster.
Where'd you find this ship?
Right here.
She saw no reason not to tell the truth.
I mean, down on the surface. Nima Outpost, to be specific.
Dropping his lower jaw to signify his disbelief, he stared back at her.
Jakku? That junkyard?
Thank you, Finn said. Junkyard!
His original opinion confirmed, he shot Ray a look that was pure I told you so. Looking away from them for the first time since they had emerged from below, their captor addressed his towering cohort.
Told you we should have double-checked the western reaches. Just lucky we were in the general vicinity when the ship powered up and its beacon snapped on.
He turned back to Ray. She was trying to make sense of the mismatched pair standing before her, and failing utterly.
Who had it?
He continued.
Duquesne?
Again, she thought, no reason to prevaricate.
I stole it from a salvage dealer named Unkar Plutt.
Brows narrowed as the weathered visage wrinkled even more.
From who?
Look.
Taking a chance, Ray lowered her hands so she could spread her arms wide.
I don't know all the details for sure. I'm not privy to Plutt's private accounting. But talk says that Plutt stole this ship from the Irving boys who stole it from Duquesne.
Who stole it from me?
In addition to anger, their captor's voice was filled with righteous indignation. To Ray, it sounded a little forced. Definitely this man was not now, and never had been, a stormtrooper or anything like it. What he had been, maybe, was someone not unlike herself. A bit of a businessman, a bit of a con man, bit of an adventurer. And since he was older, it was only reasonable to assume that he had been a bit more of all of those things than herself. What his intentions toward them were, she could not yet guess. But the fact that he didn't know who Unkar Plutt was definitely a plus on his side. He would be unlikely to immediately turn them over or try to sell them to someone he didn't know. Where he stood in relation to the First Order remained to be seen. Thus far, at least, he didn't strike her as someone overly interested in politics. Her hurried speculation as to their captor's possible motives was interrupted when he took a step toward her. Finn tensed, but neither the blaster nor the man's free hand came up.
Well, you tell him when you see him again. You tell him that Han Solo just stole back the Millennium Falcon for good!
Whirling, he holstered his blaster and headed for the cockpit, his lofty associate at his side. Either he was satisfied with her answers, Ray thought, or else he didn't care. With his back to them as he headed in the opposite direction, neither Finn nor Ray caught the change of expression from the suggestion of a smile that had threatened to crack his heated glare to a wide, contented grin. Not that it mattered. It wasn't his countenance that awed them. It was his name. Han Solo. A legend of the rebellion against the Empire. Traitor, pirate, con man, and fighter extraordinaire. It was hard to believe he was real, Finn thought. Solo was history come to life. No longer under the gun or even restrained, and abandoned in the lounge as if their presence was less than insignificant, Ray and Finn exchanged a look.
What now?
Finn gestured in the direction of the corridor that led to the cockpit.
He just left us here.
We could wait for one of them to come back, she suggested.
He nodded slowly.
Yes, we could do that. Just sit here and wait.
Without another word, they broke for the cockpit. Chapter 8 Finn and Ray caught up to the unlikely pair in the corridor, wanting desperately to confront their captor, if captor was what he was, considering that he wasn't acting much like one. Finn struggled to get past the hairy, bipedal mountain that was blocking his path. Said mountain ignored Finn's feeble efforts to push his way past. Having managed to sidle past on the other side, Ray could hardly contain her incredulity.
This is the Millennium Falcon? I didn't make the connection when we came on board.
She could not keep herself from staring at the pilot. After all, it wasn't every day in the galaxy that one met a living legend. In point of fact, it was her first living legend. For a living legend, a part of her mused, his appearance was more than a little disheveled. Almost as much as that of his companion.
You're Han Solo,
she said, looking askance. This time, instead of a smile, a grin, part amused, part knowing, and maybe a little bit bitter.
I used to be.
Finn found himself equally dumbstruck.
Here, right before him, close enough to touch, was a celebrated figure from the ancient past.
Well, he corrected himself, from the fractious past, anyway. He doubted the individual who had angrily confronted them with blaster in hand would take kindly to being referred to as ancient.
And the looming mass of wailing hirsuteness, who was his companion... What was his name?
He searched his memory, and what he knew of history...
Slew something? That was it.
No, he corrected himself. That didn't fit as a name for a...
What was the species called? Ookie?
Again, he fought to recall.
Chewbacca! Chewbacca the Wookiee, and Han Solo.
The Han Solo, or else a pair of extremely accomplished liars. Though if what he could remember was accurate, accomplished liar would fit the Han Solo as well as anything else. No harm in